Chapter 69. A March at Evening. "Oh, dear," Morel lamented with mock gravity, eyes running over the first page of a thick parcel that had recently arrived from Ironkeep. "I've been excommunicated. There is no mention of you, Jen, however. Of course, you have already been excommunicated and killed, so why bother re-excommunicating a dead person? Ah, but look, you are alive again. The church has authorized its leaders to inform the people that the Ilk, while indeed dead, presented himself to Shirtan in your form, in the which he killed you, meaning the Ilk in your form. No apologies to you, of course." They were taking lunch, as they often did, on the balcony of the Great Hall. The sun gained in strength with each day, and an air of life filled their lungs while strength of purpose reflected in their eyes. Morel continued her perusal. "It confirms that their scouts to the Shroud Lake Shard did indeed find a portal near Echo Hold, to which the Shalane, Shatan, and the Faithful, which they underlined, armies of men, will retreat to mount a defence against Mikik's eastern horde and await the birth of God."
"Where does the portal to Echo Hold lead?" Jen asked.
"To an underground cave in Tenswater, apparently. They've furiously mined it to clear a path. My spies brought word of that 2 weeks ago."
"I don't suppose Rugothians are invited inside the walls?"
"I'm getting to that. Let's see. No. A correction. Only those Rugothians who will take an oath to obey the High King." "Good. I want a solid contingent of our soldiers inside Echo Hold. I'll send General Tarun and his men. Now that Shirtan has been so gracious as to return our imprisoned Dark Guard, I'll send some in disguise as Tolnorians, Captain Tolbrook included. I have graduated the surviving apprentices to full Dark Guard, so the good captain needs something new to do. Echo Hold sounded like an adventure for him."
"The army will spend the first 3 weeks just cleaning the place," Jen speculated. "I should write and warn them about Sir Tornus."
"Please do. It appears they have already started moving men and supplies to the fortress. The portal is a scant 2 days' ride from the mountain road. Let's see. We must all be vigilant, blah, blah, blah. Here we go. The Shalane and the Ha'ulric are well and anxious for the journey to begin. They send their love to all nations and peoples."
"Did the Shalane manage to send any personal correspondence?"
"Alas, no. I think she realizes that no correspondence between us will be personal. Aethon would read every word. Soon we shall see her. At least we are spared a month-long trek across the Shroud Lake Shard. I don't think I could bear to pass that miserable copse of trees where I sincerely thought I would freeze or starve to death. As it is, we can leave comfortably in a few weeks."
Morel put the letter down and returned to her roast pork and strawberries. Jen admired her. Surely the world held no other woman like her. Just as with the Shalane during their journey through the canyon, the days of close association with the First Mother had instilled a comfortable enjoyment, trust, and happiness with her that he now identified as the best parts of love. She and her daughter shared some traits, but in many ways differed from each other to such a degree that Jen wondered how he could love them both. Morel met his eye, and a smile bloomed on her face that set his heart to pounding.
"Cadenne, please go ask the door warden if Torbrand has arrived," she commanded.
He complied, and moments later she sent the servant away. Once they were alone, she leaned forward and kissed Jen lightly.
"I have waited a long time to see that look on your face."
Jen swallowed as she stared at him invitingly. Since his comment about pulling back her hair making her look severe, she always wore it down. A breeze teased it about her face as they sat together.
"I wasn't aware I was making any sort of look," Jen responded.
"I know. That's the best part."
She kissed him again with more fervour. Jen's mind spun.
How could a woman who has never had a suitor do this so well?
He thought, after the capability to think grudgingly returned.
"Jen, I know you love the Shalane, but she is a married woman. I am not. While you may not love me in the same way or to the same degree, I think those feelings live inside you, though you have never said it. My feelings for you I have made abundantly plain in word and deed. Pledge yourself to me, and I promise you will not regret it. Whether Mikik or Eldaloth rules at the end of the summer, if I am yours, you will never lack for love or companionship or pleasure."
Sometime before we march, Gerund and Mina will wed after the Tolnorian fashion within these walls. I will invite a single pure man here to perform the ritual. He can do the same for us in secret, with only Aethrys as witness. When the drama of the Apocryphon has run its course, for good or ill, you and I can announce our love to the world." Jen opened his mouth to speak, emotions and thoughts a tumult, but Morel put a finger to his lips and shushed him. "Think first, Jen, about what I have said. Sort your feelings out and then do what you think is best. Whatever you decide, I will always love you and be as close to you as you will let me be." Jen smiled and rubbed a strand of her hair between his fingers. "Think first, Jen," she admonished. "I know I can be a bit heavy-handed with my flirtations. Make sure you know where your heart and your head are. I know how difficult that can be."
"First Mother,"
Cadern announced himself, startling them both.
"Torbrand has arrived."
When did Cadern become so stealthy? Jen wondered.
Morel held Jen's eyes a moment longer.
"Excellent. Please bring him here and have the servants send up some refreshment for him."
"The news is not all good,"
Torbrand informed them, travel-stained but chipper.
"I'm afraid that Shatan, by which I mean Aethon, has increased the number of Orgmerian troops in Tolnor above what I had left there since you announced your split from the Fidelium. Apparently Shatan, or rather Aethon, is keen not to have another defection on his hands."
"And no sign of King Filingrail?"
"I contacted Lord Kildan, as you suggested. As you can imagine, he has no kind feelings for me. Even after I firmly suggested his servant deliver your letter explaining the situation, Duke Kildan refused to see me until the church issued its revision of the events surrounding the death of the Ilk."
"We just heard of it today," Morel told him.
"It hit Tolnor 2 weeks ago. After that, his lordship tracked me down and we met in secret. He flat out refused to give up Filingrail's hiding place, stating it was a matter of that detestable Tolnorian honour. Given the disposition of Orgmerian troops, he also felt an uprising would do more harm than good."
"You said the news was not all good. It appears there is no good at all," Morel commented.
"To the good part, then," said Torbrand. "While Duke Kildan has not staged an uprising, he did manage to leave the country with around 500 of his best soldiers and his Duchess, Missa. There was a tiny bit of bloodshed to which I was able to render my service."
"Where did they go?" Morel asked, astonished.
"That's the good news. To Rugoth. They crossed into Tenswater, but had to leave quickly before the church got wind of what we were doing. We convinced the portal mage in Tolnor that we were on our way to Orgmir, and then told the portal mage in Tenswater that the troops were Rugothian. Word of your excommunication hadn't circulated too widely yet, so we slipped them through before the church isolated your little shard cluster here."
Morel grinned. "Excellent. I wish to see Lord Kildan as soon as it can be arranged. We have some planning to do."
Torbrand leaned back and folded his arms.
"I thought you might, and he will arrive in a few days. We need to have some arrangement for quartering his men, and you might be receiving some complaints from various of your subjects, both low and high, upon whom I have called for aid, or otherwise inconvenienced. Or offended."
"Very well. Will you take some refreshment?"
"No, I would like to see Mina."
"She is likely wandering the grounds somewhere with her husband."
"Then I shall look for them. I have some instructions to pass on to him concerning how my daughter is to be treated. Good day."
Morel thought for a moment.
"What do you make of Lord Kildan's move, Jen?"
"Shatan, by which I mean Aethon, will turn purple with fury. All the good generals outside of Orgmir, Torbrand, Tarun, Kildan and Harband, are now on your side of the fence.
And let's not forget to put you on the list," Morel said. "But what motivated Lord Kildan to act as he did?"
"Honour is the key. I can only guess, but the only way Duke Kildan could stomach Orgmerian occupation was by believing he would, in the end, serve the prophecy through complying with the commands of the Ha'ulric. Your dispatch no doubt opened his eyes to Aethon's duplicitous, and thus dishonourable, machinations. For him, your cause is the only purely honourable one left." She wiped her mouth and stood.
"An interesting assessment. I'm quite pleased he has come, whatever the reason."
Jen, High Protector of Rugoth, sat alone in the library. 2 weeks had passed since Torbrand's return, and the time had come at last to march. The church had sent detailed instructions about where and when the armies of Rugoth would be permitted to cross into Tenswater and through the portal, long after the main bodies of Tolnorians and Augmerians. They had a week-long march around the King's Blood Lake ahead of them, and the steady stream of arrangements and details and complaints had kept a good night's sleep just out of reach for the better part of the week. The title of Lord Protector held a heavy price, and Jen wondered where Regent Ogbith had ever found the time to go for a drink at the Quick Blade Inn. Luckily, he learned to rely on the experience of Telmeron. Lesson one was to delegate everything possible. Lesson two, the people you delegate to will most likely do it wrong. Lesson three, when they do mess up, get angry, but be sure not to dismiss your best people over trivial matters. As for squabbling and complaints, a good leader must know that there is rarely a satisfactory answer for a whining soldier, so find a way to reward all complaints with extra work for the aggrieved. So far it had worked fairly well, though he admitted that much of his success he could attribute to his mystique and the general knowledge that Mirel favoured him excessively. An hour before Jeren's wedding, Jen had escaped all his duties and fled to the confines of the library, hoping to find some way to settle his mind and come up with a response to Mirel's proposal. His love for the Shalane filled every thought of acceptance with guilt. His love for Mirel and his general awe of her intelligence and beauty made every argument to decline seem idiotic. All the broken pieces of shattered arguments bobbed and floated on a confused sea of emotion and reason. I am the Ilk. The Shalane is married. There is a war brewing. I love the Shalane. I love Mirel. We might all be dead in a month. I don't deserve either one. They would be happier with someone else. I would be miserable without them. Nothing stuck. One thought could not claw its way to preeminence over the others. Mirel politely had not pressed him further for an answer, though she certainly had not retired her affectionate attentions from him. While he knew she did this out of love and a need for companionship, he doubted she realized how addicted he had become to stolen kisses and warm embraces. The need for them ran through him like a sickly, sweet drink that he hadn't quite identified as a poison or an elixir. Perhaps it was both. But he knew the difference between love of the heart and pleasures of passion, and he would not let the pleasures have a voice in his decision. Frustrated, he went in search of a book that held a poem that had teased his memory all day with the ending stanza. At length he found it in a collection of writings preserved from the Second Mykikian War. Author unknown. A black tower rises into the night, and there sit I, gazing down on your dance. The torches, like flowers of flickering light, unveil to my mind the tombs of the past. I see the smiles of those who danced before, and lost in lovers' arms, laughed to cheer who, but for looking in eyes they adore, would have seen the darkness circling near. But blind to the threat, cares smothered by lips, they dance in the torchlight by distraction brave. From behind comes death, from the dance they trip, ears for the music stopped up by the grave. So decide to dance, but choose not to love, for the torches burn out and the shadows come. He snapped the book shut and leaned back. Choose not to love. If love was a choice, he could not remember consciously making it. Vainly he willed the sun to halt in the sky to give him more time, but time skipped along, heedless of his wishes. A servant entered the room. My lord, it is time. Mirel awaits you outside her apartments. Thank you. I will come shortly. The servant left and Jen rose. From this day forward, he would live with regret, and all of his supposed wisdom only stared back at him with a silly grin and shrugged its shoulders. Replacing the book, he put on the coat of his dress uniform and left. Mirel waited patiently for him, dressed as always, to erase any thoughts but those of her. She smiled, but noting the gravity in Jen's countenance, tempered her affectionate greeting. Jen extended his arm to her and she took it. "Cadean, would you mind walking ahead?" Jen requested. "I wish to speak to the First Mother privately." Cadean said, "If she wills it."
"I do, Cadean. We shall be along by and by."
Cadean bowed and left, and Jen walked forward slowly, breathing in Mirel's inebriating scent. They crossed from the antechamber of the Shalane and into the hallways beneath the great hall.
"Is all in order for the march tomorrow?"
Morell asked tentatively. Hmm? Oh, yes, yes it is. Will you please demote me? Morell laughed, breaking the tension. Of course not. You have done too well, as I knew you would. The generals are astonished at how expertly you have handled your new position. I think Tern Kildan would claim you for a son if he could. He has been very helpful. Jen pulled her to a halt. Listen to me. When you split with General Tarun at Echo Road, please take Kildan's counsel over Harband's. Harband is a capable commander, I'm sure, but he enjoys the killing a little too much. Also, do not ride at the front of your army or dress in a remarkable way. Uyumark archers are trained to search out leadership and strike there first. Keep close to Cadayan and keep capable soldiers with you at all times. If you're forced to run, do not wait for cover of night. Dark is more of a disadvantage to you than to Uyumark. I should have taken time to teach you the knife. She smiled and put her hand on his cheek. Jen, I will be fine. You're the one taking the most risk. Does that mind of yours ever stop turning? You looked so preoccupied and severe just now. Jen smoothed his features. Oh, no, you don't, Morell objected. None of Torbrand Cairn's soul-smothering training today, Lord Jen. Jen grinned and kissed her. That was nice, she complimented him, smiling. At last you kiss me. Things have been feeling a bit one-sided.
I am sorry, Jen apologized.
For the kiss?
Of course not. How could I regret that? How could anyone? I apologize for the seeming one-sided nature of things.
I do love you, Morell.
Before he could say more, she put her arms around him and buried her head in his shoulder. He pulled her close as she trembled, tears sliding down her cheeks.
You have no idea how long I have waited to be loved, and how long I have hoped you would love me. While any man's sincere love would be a blessing, to have yours, the best man that I know, is a joy beyond any dream or hope I could ever have.
Surely you must see that loving me is utter recklessness.
No more than loving me, she returned, pulling herself away and wiping her eyes. You must know that you will never get your way.
Please, Morell, be serious. You know what I am. You know what we face.
Morell ignored him, pulling him around and resuming their course down the hall.
You know, I have called you Lord Jen for weeks now, and it simply does not seem right. It has no weight.
I need one of those impressive last names all those aristocrats seem to have. Alas, I have no family line I wish to claim, and, tragically, I am no longer Lord of Blackshire.
What a coincidence. I need a last name, too. This whole First Mother business is nearly at an end, and Queen Morell won't do. What do you say we invent a last name together, and we can share it?
That was a clever segue, he chuckled.
And you fell for it. I've always thought names that end in door carried a certain weight, like Erindor or Philindor. What do you think?
You can't be serious. Morell Philindor?
Ridiculous. Come up with a better one, then.
Short names carry more power, like Black, or Stone, or Loris.
Black and Stone, she mocked. How unoriginal. And really, would you want to be called Lord Loris for the rest of your life? Lord Philindor is clearly better, whatever you may say.
Come now, who would ever cross a Lord and Lady Black?
Morell's laugh mingled with the happy sounds of celebration that crescendoed as they neared the great hall.
I do look forward to watching Torbrand Cairn lead his daughter to the marriage altar. The dead collection of Shadans may just rise up from the grave to prevent it. This will be a spectacle.
As they neared the doors, the Chamberlain bowed and turned to announce them, but Morell held him back.
Not tonight, Ernie.
They slipped in unannounced, but not unnoticed, and in moments they enjoyed the warmth and cheer of friends, old and new. Leaving Morell with Lord Kildan, Jen crossed to Mina and Gerund, who were all smiles. Jen hugged them both warmly.
I see that Volney's surprise has not arrived yet, Jen commented to his Tolnorian friend upon noticing their young companion sitting quietly in a corner.
Gerund glanced at their mutual friend.
I believe the steward is busy finding some piece of finery for Lena to wear that is fit for a company such as this. I hope Volney doesn't kill us. He will be mightily embarrassed.
Probably, Jen said, but he'll get over it rather quickly, I think.
Look, there she is.
Ah, Gerund exclaimed.
Yes, he will get over it.
He might actually thank us before the year is out.
She's adorable, Mina agreed.
but we're all rather plain compared to the First Mother. Perhaps, Jen, you could tell her she is quite beautiful enough and need not outshine us all so thoroughly. But I mean no disrespect, of course. I was only jesting. Please don't tell her I said anything. Why did my father let me grow up so outspoken? I suppose it is time she could look for a suitor.
I think the search is over,
Gerund smirked, nudging Jen.
Really?
Mina said.
Oh, yes. But watch, Lena is nearly upon him.
Lena, clearly nervous, had wound her way toward the unsuspecting Volney, touching him lightly on the arm. At first he didn't seem to recognize the young woman, but after a few moments he shot to his feet, face turning several shades of red before settling on sanguine. They chuckled as he desperately searched for some proper way to show his delight, resolving at last to kiss her hand. Mirelle arrived at Jen's side.
I see all went according to plan. Gerund, Mina, are you ready to begin?
Both bowed. Gerund said,
Yes, First Mother. Again we thank you.
None of that, Gerund. Go speak with your respective fathers, and all of you meet with the Chamberlain. I'll find the pure man and send him over so he can dispense with his wisdom and final instructions.
Yes, First Mother.
Mirelle said to Jen,
Now come, Lord Philindor, we must find that pure man.
As you wish, Lady Black.
And will he be leaving early this evening or very late?
The scales in Jen's mind teetered both ways. Reason, wisdom, passion, and emotion collided so violently within his heart that he scarcely knew what came out of his own mouth. But when the repressed words finally found the freedom of the open air, they sounded right, and he knew it was the answer he had intended to give all along. This is the end of Book 3, but the story continues with Sacrifice, Book 4 of the Trismoon Saga. Keep listening after the credits for a free preview. You have been listening to Hunted, Book 3 of the Trismoon Saga, produced by Greg Lawrence. Executive producers James Tonn and Greg Lawrence. Text copyright 2014 by Brian K. Fuller. Production copyright 2015 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved.